CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. The fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Joining me today, indie game guy, awesome game dev guy, John Henderson. How's it going, good sir?
I'm very glad to be here, Berto.
How you been, man?
It's been a good day. I mean, now it's officially fall in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if we could have it for more than 3 weeks before it goes
away. That's the hard part to explain to people. Yeah. I have a friend of mine recently moved here. And I think she's from like the Northwest, and she was complaining on Facebook, and this is such a weird thing to complain about when I say what it is, and every Texan's going to go and say like, and even I, as a guy that grew up in the Midwest in Michigan, like even I know not to complain about this, but she was saying, I can't believe it's raining here. I thought it didn't rain here. I'm like,
no, you're thinking about El Paso, but yeah. Even then it rains there sometimes.
Yeah,
and
you,
they can't,
you don't complain about right. The rain. You accept the rain.
Yeah.
As
tell all those people in Houston, it doesn't rain in Texas. That's part of Texas too.
Well, you tell people in, you know, you accept that the rain is a good thing. You know, it sucks when it's too much, and right. Yes, it's horrible when it's flooding and whatnot.
Yeah, that's always a risk because, again, if you don't have flooding all the time, it's not like Bangkok or something like that. They have really good drainage.
Yeah.
So, and meanwhile, Houston is built on a bayou.
Well, because the hard part for people to always understand, and I guarantee you have enough, you know, you and I have enough friends in all different aspects of the world and all different aspects of the country that we can make this joke where we have a snow day, so to speak.
Right.
And it's,
you know. Oh, well, again, it's not the snow. It's that Texas drivers have no idea what to do in any weather.
That's
they
right.
lose their minds.
That's why
I missed the Andrew WK show last night, because I just didn't want to deal with the roads.
See, I felt working, bad about I was working that night, and I'm kind of bummed because I'm not sure.
There was a good show.
Well, I'm sure my friend performed there, our mutual friend, Amanda
Lepre. I'm so glad. And again, she's the person where I knew her when, because I booked her on the stage of KLRU Studio 6A at the UT campus where they used to shoot Austin City Limits. She played that stage.
Really?
She was an intermission show because I was doing a speaker series with the IGDA chapter called Microtalks, and I just booked her there, and she just did her own stuff with her big, you know, her Dreadnought Martin guitar that looks so huge on her. And I mean, it was not that many people were watching her because of an intermission show, but some people really liked her.
And, Amanda's an amazingly talented musician. Yes. And I'm glad I've had the opportunity to talk with her on the show. I'm glad I've had the opportunity of getting into that scene of video game kind of music and meeting her and that. Cause like I can trace back. I can tell the first time I saw Descendants of Urgent perform live, and that was almost the first time they actually performed live as a group. And I can trace back just by knowing her a lot, you know, meeting a lot of different musicians over time, from, you know, Megaran to, you know, IQ to Kay Murdoch to a lot of the musicians you've seen in the show is because I happened to go to one Descendants of Urgent show.
Yep.
And they just happened to be there as well.
Yeah, the original Descendants of Urdric lineup played twice on the curtain stage at Richard Garriott's property out in Lake Austin because I booked them. That was rad. Because again, I was an IGDA officer for almost 4 years.
So explain what IGDA is, because you've had a very interesting background when it comes to the Austin game scene, and I say that in like vagueness because it's, you know, like your and I interaction. Mm-hmm. I think it has to have been Juegos Rancheros.
Juegos and one time at the brewery over here where they had a Party World Wrestling show.
That's right.
Yeah, we got to talk to you a little bit about that.
Right. It's funny, and I think about this every time when it comes to like music things. Like I didn't talk with Vincent Banks, UGA Rockman, for the longest time, and I'd see him at all these other events. I'd see him as like a staple, and I could I recognize that guy. I finally got a chance to, you know, and now we're like really good friends, and now we chit chat beyond that. But you're that kind of thing where I'd see you at all these different events, and we'd interact with the exact same people.
Yes,
but we never really interacted together, and yet.
Oh, I'm sure there are plenty of people that I know like that, so you would too. Again, not it's a context thing. So IGDA, International Game Developers Association, it's an ad hoc group for game developers, and it's absolutely the kind of nonprofit group that it's everything you put into it, but not a lot more. The real strength of it comes from the surveys they do of their own membership. And the regional chapters and their special interest groups, their SIGs. So there has been an IGDA chapter here in Austin for quite a number of years, and I'd called myself chapter secretary because that's basically what I did, but within that, I hosted my own show for a number of years intermittently, and I got to do things like they had the here in Austin, which was pretty unique for the chapter. We would have the picnic at Richard Garriott's property, which was an outgrowth of the events that people who used to work for him at Origin Studios used to do just to get back together. And the last one we did of that was 2011, and it hasn't happened since, which is kind of sad. But
even that sort of that property is, from what I understand, it's going.
Yes, he
elsewhere.
He got married,
right?
And he had a kid for the first time, like I guess he's 2 years ago at the age of 51, and he's splitting his time here and the brownstone up in New York. His wife and his kid, which ought to be his priority. Although he still runs Portalarium by telepresence robot. There's a robot that wanders around the office with his face on it.
That's the future, but that's. I would.
It's very much him. If you're the son of the astronaut, you'd be doing that too.
I guess so. I guess that's a point. There's things that Richard has done over time. There.
And you think about it. If there's one person who, if you think about it, like the origin again,
though. Do you would you call the robot Richard or would you call it Lord British?
I don't work for him. So
let's say
I don't think they call him Lord British professionally.
I would call
him
Lord,
Richard.
I would demand
Lord Richard.
Lord Richard. Yeah, Lord Richard. I would probably
Lord Richard, Admiral Chris, Warren.
Well, because like the thing is that like I think of Richard Garriott and I think of like all the different properties he worked on, not just Ultima, but what was the. It was the last MMO they worked on, and it was like a space shooter thing. I can't even remember what it was.
Well, there's Privateer Online. That was done internally, but it never shipped. Earth and Beyond was done at Westwood.
Maybe it was Earth and Beyond, because there's one thing where like he's like Commander British or something.
Oh, no, you're talking about Tabula Rasa.
Tabula Rasa.
Yeah, that was done at NCSoft.
That's what I thought. Tabula Rasa was like the last one I remember.
Well,
his name
was literally on the box, and it shipped when he was in training to go into space with the Russians.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I worked at NCSoft for almost 7 years. In the support department, so I got to see just at the point when all the local developers were laid off. But I mean, the good news is that a lot of them have gone and done very well for themselves, like Susan Kath, who's now Susan Kath Bannister, was the executive producer for Prey at Arkane Studios, which is really great for her.
Well, because people forget, like, the Arkane's here, right?
Yes, Arkane Austin is here. Right. It was founded in Lyon, France. So that team over in Lyon did Dishonored and Dishonored 2.
Right, and this team, I think...
This one did Prey.
Prey, right. That's one thing it's hard to explain to people when it comes to, like, you know, outside the world. Because everyone sort of thinks when it comes to, like, video game studios, it's L.A., it's Seattle.
Let's talk about that. You know, because so many people think about games is that you just wave your hands a lot.
Yeah.
You know, well, there's that classic old Atari commercial for Yar's Revenge, and it starts with a dude in an office chair, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And it's like there's this fly going around. It's like, ooh, it's a fly. Make a game about a fly, and it's like a mutant
fly.
There's
that commercial. I forget, like, I never saw the commercial, but it's like the commercial plays at, like, 3 in the morning, and you're, you know...
Oh, the one advertising the school where it's
up
the graphics.
Exactly. Tight other graphics on
so
stage 3.
So basically this is the
which
best
means
messaging.
Absolutely nothing.
It's the best messaging that most people have gotten. There's still people who think that video games are made by people in office chairs waving their hands around and talking to the air. that just makes a video game. It's like, no, it never has worked that
no,
way.
No, I don't think...
Not even an Atari.
So. I think Atari... Well, there is always the joke about Atari. I think they actually want more of a television, because there's a game that's on... Is it a television? Yeah, was... No, it might have been... I'm now trying to remember like my thing. So we had the Odyssey. Okay, in television. It had to be in television. It was sort of the precursor to what we would know as the... Not even RTS, but as whatever you would want to call Age of Empires.
Okay.
The game was called Utopia.
Hmm.
And the thing is that like it's a really kind of an interesting game to, you know, it's a very ambitious game for it being on an Intellivision, because right. It's like you're a lot of it's very abstract, but you're like having you're building towns and stuff like that, and you're getting income and like you have rounds. It's weird. It's right. weird because you're like you go and you look. This is an Intellivision game. This is back when like Pac-Man looked like shit on a console, and really you all you needed was Frogger. Like there wasn't a whole lot you could do, but that was it. But a lot of times in that like collection of games, they would talk about how in manuals there's this, if you hit whatever, the screen turns purple and it's an Easter egg, where it was really just a bug. It was just a bug that they couldn't get developed.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that like, because this is during the era of, you know, there's a lot of people don't quite see it now because, you know, we've gone well beyond it, thankfully. But that was during the era when memory was precious.
Right.
And I don't mean like memory as in like both RAM, but I mean like memory and like board. That's why you have like, you know, three, you know, five.
Oh, I mean, they didn't even have any. I mean, they all had machine instructions. It wasn't like they had any digital storage for anything.
Right. There wasn't any texture memory. Assets or anything like that. But a lot of times they would make a game, they'd have to print that board to actually see what their code did.
Yes.
And then when that board came back, it was, well, there are these bugs here, and the company's like, well, we just manufactured 500 of these things, so you better fucking sell them.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, we're gonna sell these things. Looks like we'll put the just put the branding and
it's a feature, not a bug,
right? And again, it's
if it doesn't affect the gameplay and people might actually like it, it turns purple. Ooh,
who cares? It doesn't. Who gives a shit? Like, even if it did, like, no one's gonna fucking see it. Who cares?
Which is the attitude of a lot of game developers I know. It's like, yeah, there are problems with the game, but it's like, oh, you fell through the floor and you started over.
Now we're in a and I was talking and you know, we talk about, I know we're talking about game development. For those who are curious, this is probably a B that theme of the show, and we'll talk candidly as much as I can. And I want to stress this. I stress with the following. I do with every thing. We're not here to ever chastise devs, because devs are great people.
And they're doing something that not everyone can do. Right. They've worked to this point in their careers. It's what they want to be doing, and they're human beings. Yes. But they're human beings that are kind of disincentivized from admitting their own humanity.
But two, you know,
Two,
I may talk candidly about at least my understanding of the business, and my understanding has been through, I tell everyone the same story. I didn't learn what CERT meant until Rami posted that article,
right?
And then I understood what CERT meant, and I'm like, because I'd always hear that, and I always think, oh, it's certification, like making sure it like runs and stuff like that. And I was like, no,
there's a process involved.
And I understand, you know, when he posted, like, oh, now I get CERT, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I can put that in my databanks and go, okay, I understand what this means now, and I'm glad someone told me, because that's all I needed to have is just someone telling me what the fuck this is, because I do care. But like, I was talking with a bunch of and these are gamers, these are people who play like Destiny and stuff like that, and they're kind of complaining about microtransactions and the sort of idea of this thing, and it's more popular in the internet space, the idea of application as a service.
Right,
where you have sort of like a Slack, or you have a hosted Gmail server, these applications that exist that you utilize, but you're not installing anything. You just kind of license. You know, you go to the web, the cloud, as people call it. You just kind of use it, not even really thinking about what this application means or if it as an application.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that started to happen now in game development that some people get, some people don't get, the idea of games as a service.
Right.
Where you have this sort of product, whether it be free to play or even purchase to play. And the idea is that because of how much it costs to develop and how much sort of things are, and even to maintain these bugs and fix them, because, again, people get paid. Even if it's one developer, that's about, you know, let's just say $70,000 a year, just for sake of argument. I'm lowballing a salary. It's probably more.
Yeah. Well, two things. One, you can never use, you know, games are really expensive, and they're, and you can't use an excuse for everything that you do. And but the more importantly, there are some gamers for whom everything you say is going to sound like an excuse.
Right.
But number two is that games, like most projects, they are projects. They have an end.
Yeah. Well, so it's a life cycle.
The most. And, well, now it's not even really a life cycle, but the, like the development cycle will end. And so at that point, most game studios do not survive their first chip.
No.
They don't. It kills them because there are a lot of things that have to do with the success of a game that have nothing to do with developers, like developing it. Once you make the thing.
Like I always feel like the best path for a dev studio to go is almost like the way Way Forward has done it, where you kind of make... You know, like before they started making their own Shanti games and, mm-hmm. and that, even before they made like DuckTales Remastered,
right?
Which is one of the best remastered versions of it for a multitude of reasons.
Well, they have Vert on staff, so.
Well, that was the greatest part. They had Vert on staff.
That's how they sold that. Disney wasn't going to do it. Well, because like, oh, this guy can do
the
music.
The greatest part of that is if you know who Vert is and you're part of the OC Rubik's scene, mm-hmm. you know that that's basically like, hey, Vert, do you want to make a tribute to one of the greatest video game soundtracks out there?
It's
like,
probably
yeah.
pretty much.
It's like, sure,
him
why
in
not?
Because
that was like a dream come true. And it was, and you play the game and you realize that they gave a shit, which is even better, and that's what engendered me to like them, and why I kicked in Ashanti for that reason is like they gave a shit, so cool. But even before then, they had made like kind of middleware stuff, and they sort of made these sort of other projects, other kind of things, and mm-hmm. we don't really think about, like, we rarely think about the studios that make your video game, your movie tie-in games.
Well, no. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it except that movie tie-in games include some of the worst games ever made.
Well, because a lot of time, and again, this is also, you know, getting into that whole sort of why we're kind of, you know, being the way we are. But it's like those games are almost like the average, and I say this many times, and if I'm wrong, feel free to correct me. But I've always interpreted like the average, that's like, I put average in quotation marks, is 3 to 5 years.
For a big game,
for a big game, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even for
like 50 people on the
team. Even for a small, even for like some small games, like with like, you know, a big game with 50 people, but like a small game with like 3 people or 5 people.
Right.
You know.
It's possible to do it faster, but again, a lot of times it has little to do with the with the quality of the finished product, because you can kind of think about that as a sweet spot.
Yeah.
Because if you very rarely do you see a team that doesn't spend enough time on it. But then there are also some projects that go on for like 6 or 7 years, and then no one wants to buy it at the end of it.
People are talking in the chat room saying, it's a vicious tech hardware loop. Get better hardware, make better games.
That is a
games
good...
Games get bloated, games get hard.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, it certainly helps if you know what you want in the beginning, but that isn't always a given. But yeah, there's a good adage. A friend of mine, Mike Shaver, who was at Facebook, and I think he went back to work at Mozilla, he would say... perfect software is late software.
Right.
But again, this is not like you just write up a spec for a new word processor and you know everything that's going to go into it and just follow the spec.
Even then, it's not, and this is, you know, this is the creative process in general, no matter whether you're making
a word
processor.
Well, it is a creative product. It's not just like regular software, but it's still software.
But even regular software goes through these sort of things, because when you think about, like if you think about Word, and I always remember this because everybody fucking gave Microsoft so much shit for it, and it's no longer the case now. But do you remember when people were just so fucking pissed off at the ribbon? So originally Microsoft Word's interface, for those who've never thought about this.
Yeah, I don't remember this at all.
That's okay. Back before, I would almost like to say Word, maybe Office 2000 might have been the first one to do this, maybe later on. But it might have been later, but the original kind of Word interface had, Mr. Clippett.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying.
No. The original Word interface had the idea where you had all these icons there, and they're all kind of on this main giant toolbar. You could have the toolbar be like 3 or 4 layers deep if you wanted to.
Okay.
Years later, they revised it. And they know what's called, they call it the ribbon interface. What we see now today, where if you open up Word now, mm-hmm. you kind of have this sort of context of what you're doing. You can kind of, you know, you have sort of like, here's your editing things, here's your this things, here's your that things.
Oh, is this being one long strip?
Right, the ribbon.
Okay.
And so people,
now
I know
you're talking about.
People, like, at least in the office, like, it might have been my sphere, people got furious because they had had their customizations down. Yeah. They had got their quick keys
down.
Don't
mess with the user interface. I mean, that's the most primary thing.
It's interesting now because I understood what it was doing. It was like, for me, I liked it because I was like, cool, I have this context of what I'm doing. I get to this. And now we're like years removed. Mm-hmm. And people are like, Ribbon sucks. That's why. But now we're years removed, and only people like me even kind of remember that, which is funny. And I say that as a thing of like, sometimes you have to kind of make and this is sort of the hard part of I think development, whether it be a game, whether it be a software product, especially these sort of things that we use, because you know you can even say something as you know people get very, very upset when their favorite character gets balanced because that's not what the game devs really wanted in their pro mm-hmm. circuit. Where, you know, but sometimes you got to make that design decision, whatever it is, for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's going to be a give and take, and there's always going to be a gulf between the end user and people making anything. But the real risk for a developer that I have seen one too many times is what I call contempt. Because you have to remember and not contempt someone for only appreciating the finished product for what they can see of it. And they may even know that there's stuff under the hood. But a good example right now is all the people on Steam who will ask the question, is this made in Unity? Well, yeah, it is. I hated Unity.
I love that that's become this weird way. Because it's not like anyone back in the early days of... It's not like anyone ever said, "Is this made on it on like when did but I put this into your mind, John. People are talking about changing the staple of UI. Go back in it for sure, and I agree. It's funny. It's hard. It was one of those things where I understood why they did it as a design, because like, okay, this makes sense. I can see why people got mad too, because they're used to something that changed.
Right.
Going back to this thing, when did you – and you might be an edge case because I don't even know when I became aware of this, of the idea of an engine. Like the idea of here is a game engine,
mm-hmm.
and this engine represents more than just the game you're playing.
Well, I think the first time was id Software talking about using the Quake engines. And how, because they were also actively marketing it to other teams. A lot of them were in around Dallas, you know, Ritual and Gearbox were using this. And then Valve used one of the Quake 2 engines and remade their own engine out of it. But we knew that it existed. But unless we were like actually working with it, we didn't know what it really did.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people still have this notion that an engine is just like you put fuel in it, you turn the crank, and you get a game. It's like, no.
No, it's not. Like, I didn't – like, I had kind of known of what an engine was when – I think the first time I ever got introduced to the concept of an engine, it might have been the video game Full Throttle. Because there's a point in that game where you're
talking about Scum.
Well, Scum is one thing, but that's even not. This is not even talking about Scum. This is pre me understanding what the hell Scum was or what it used, which I think was.
Oh, did it say engine programmers in there somewhere?
Well, no. It was more of there was. So when I got the game, I got like this player's guide with it or something like that, and in the guide it mentioned that some of the code for. Specifically, there's a scene in the game where you're going down the mine road and you're sort of in the bike and you're fighting all these kind of bikers with your weapons and whatnot.
The combat system. Right. The best part of Full Throttle. No, it really wasn't.
It was. But the point being, they would say in the manual, it was, this is, we borrowed code from, at that point, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
Oh, yes.
And that was like my first introduction into the concept of an engine. I don't think I understood that until someone gave me Duke Nukem 3D.
Which was based on Build.
Right.
Which is 3D Realms' own version.
And then somebody, and then there was this, look at the level editor. Mm. And I understood like, oh, because then someone gave me a manual for the level editor. Because someone wrote a book for it. Because no one gave this shit to anybody. And then you realize, there's something underlying here. I don't quite understand it yet. I don't know what this means. I don't know the concept of what the name of this is or anything like that.
Right.
But there's more to this game than simply the game I'm playing.
Yeah.
And that's when that kicked in, and then later on you go in life of running, you know, server emulators and, you know, speaking of things like that, and you start to get an idea of this. And it's funny when I see the whole concept of, oh, this is written in Unity, so this must be garbage.
Well, it's certainly a case of a little bit of too much knowledge can be dangerous.
Yeah.
Because again, people ought to play games because they love games. And if it's not fun, you should stop playing. So if you don't want to play a game, you shouldn't feel obligated of making up a reason not to. Maybe it's bad. Maybe it doesn't appeal to you.
Oh no, there've been game. There is a one point, like there is a game I played for review for an indie thing, and it was sort of aping Contra in terms of art style and in terms of that. But I thought it was a little too slow and it didn't play well. And it was written in, I think it was done in, I forget what engine it was done in, but there have been other games in that same engine. I'm like, that don't have that. Right. Features the characteristics.
I'm just talking about the people who are. In general, unfortunately, way too many gamers seem to become the kind of people who are just making themselves miserable.
Well, because we're coming to the point now, and it's funny because I talked about this, and I don't know if I talked about you with this, but I've always told a story about the South by year. It was South by Gaming, and it was like I think a week before, like Unreal announced that was, I think it was either, I don't remember, it was Engine 4, Engine 3, but they announced, by the way, everybody, it's free, you know, anyone can.
Oh, yeah. Because basically it was their Unity is going to eat our lunch. Exactly. If we don't
and
do
that's
something
the thing is no one, unless you're in the industry, you understood
right.
that. And unless you really understood Engine.
Well, the developers there cared about it. Right. So that's kind of why they wanted to do it was, South by Southwest, which is like a big broad brush
right.
branding
festival
here
and
in
Austin.
I
remember it had that. And I was at the game thing. I was talking to like a studio at the time, and I was like mentioning like how big a deal that was because I understood how big of a deal it was to have
right.
what we would consider a AAA engine at free, and the idea that anyone could fuck around with this.
Well, the real problem with it is because people would get the engine, they just pirate it. So when you give it away for free, you're basically acknowledging that this is a tool. Yes, we're going to make money off of it, but maybe we need to focus more on getting people to use this engine to actually make things that people want to play that look good and make us look good, and we want to support them. That's the kind of business we want to get in. Like, id could have gotten into that business, but they decided not to.
Yeah,
they wanted to make their own games.
People are saying in the chat room that I think it's, I can't read the name, it's M. Beam says he was very fluid in GDK Radiant map making for Quake, which is awesome. But it's funny because I wonder if we're going to hit that point with Unreal soon. Where people are looking, because you know we've hit that point with Unity because everybody has Unity, everyone can develop
right.
in Unity.
Well,
easily.
Here's the thing: if you make a game with the non-commercial version of Unity and you put it out there, the first splash
that's
screen
true.
Is
it's
made with
Unity. Right.
Like even John Riccitiello, their CEO, have basically said that may be a problem. Maybe we need not do that anymore.
Well, because it's hard.
They're not showing their own product as quality by putting it through the lens of uncreative and non-technical people that are just putting stuff out there because they can. Which,
yeah.
I mean, bless them for doing that, but there's not a lot of
quality
control anymore.
Well, that's why I always took, like, Unity. Why when anybody ever slams on Unity, I go, are you kidding me? This is great. And in that, it like, when Unity got announced and when and Unity's sort of a product and this engine, I was like, this is awesome.
Well, you realize that basically it was made by a Danish team that wanted to make a game and they didn't quite make it. So they just had a really good tool set. That's what Unity was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until really like Unity 3 and arguably 3.5 that you started seeing some real commercial products coming out.
Well, because that was what I always appreciated was this idea of here is a, you know, because you had some open source engines out there.
Right.
And you had it at the time. You still do have them where they were occasionally open source one of their older engines to kind of fuck around with. And I've always liked the idea of having something that says, here you go, learn.
Right.
Because ultimately a lot of the game development, because there's all these schools of thought and there are actual courses and whatnot you can learn. Because there are certain concepts in game development that aren't just simply limited to video games.
And individual people learn different ways.
Right. But
there are also, there's something to be said for good old-fashioned computer science applications, because I talk to a lot of programmers and programming leads that worry about the people that just learn from the internet, because they don't learn things like the discipline that you're supposed to learn in classes, like comment your code, understand your system requirements, don't go overboard on memory, you know, and make something maintainable that someone else might have to deal with later.
Well, because I always make the joke that if you ever want to learn, because one of my friends was like, I want to learn programming. What game should I look, you know, should I look at any of these game engines? No. those are like spaghetti code. Like those are baling wire and sheet metal examples. Like they sometimes barely work because they got them to work because they had to eventually ship.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. It's just you don't learn how to actually program. You don't learn the concepts of commenting and how, like, there have been times where I did a website and I wanted to do a redesign of it later on, and I forgot to comment my code. I was literally
I went
through, like, line by line trying to figure out what the fuck was I thinking. And that's me, and that's my own code, and that's my own fucking site stuff. And,
but you write it down so you don't have to remember it the whole time. It's
right,
like
but that's why you comment, you know, and there are ways to do self-commenting now, but even then, commenting a section that, and understanding somebody, and the idea, again, of understanding somebody else may come by and see this is also kind of helpful. But yeah, like that's such a thing that you get ingrained in comp sci, you get ingrained in business application development, you get ingrained in certain stuff.
Well, just real experience, period.
Because even in like real, also don't forget to a mundane detail like a decimal point in like Office Space, which was a great example. But you know, but even those sort of things, it's so funny that, you know, in game development now that we're getting. More people are coming in the chat room. How's it going, good sirs? Or madams?
I think the answer is yes.
Yeah. Do you have a YouTube channel? I have one, but...
No, I don't.
I
personally,
do.
Yeah.
You can go to Cosmic Radio TV. Usually we're always streaming on Twitch today. Sometimes we stream on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm not the host
of
this.
There. You can over to youtube.com/CosmicRadioTV and watch any of the previous stuff. But going back to game development, going back to engine and all stuff like that. Because you have, again, you've had this crazy background of all... Of knowing, I have not heard of BCHS News.
What's
YouTube.
It stand for?
It's your other school's news too. Cool, rock
very
on.
Good.
No, it's okay. It's good. Good. Keep doing your thing. Keep on making your program, good sir. But going back to the whole game dev thing, that's awesome. I mean, I do too, but. I'm gonna be.
It's cute.
We're.
It's precious.
I will think about it, sir. Right now, I'm in the show, but let me. I'll get back to you in a few. But either way, keep on powering on. Good luck with your goal, and do your best to make quality content.
Excellent.
See, that's what I try to do. I try my best to encourage people.
Yeah, we're like not outwardly discouraging them.
Well, because I think that's kind of becoming the norm in.
Well, it's difficult to respond to someone just as a pat answer without, you know, enthusiastically encouraging what you might want to do or just slapping them down.
I would say hold off putting a link just because I'm not right now. I'm not moderating. I don't have a chance to. Just feel free to, if you want, @reply@Vincent404. Here's the link. Tweet it my way, and I'll give it a chance looking at that. That might be an easy way to do it for sure. Just @reply@Vincent404.
Is this a school project?
It's okay. @reply@Vincent404 on Twitter, and I will look at it after the show, sir. But thank you. See, that's how you do it. But this is something funny in terms of game deving.
Mm-hmm.
That's always weird and wonky. A lot of times in game development, like especially on the gamer side, it almost feels like I can't, what was a dev that recently posted about like the idea of not wanting to put stuff out because of this toxic community?
Yeah, that Twitter thread that was really great. So I think it's an even more fundamental thing that we haven't talked about now is that when you play a game, you are fooling yourself into thinking you're creating something. It's like, I'm making something with doing this or like this. Like, really, all you're doing is choosing between the choices that someone else made for you. But it feels like a creative process. So people think that, and they're being sold the idea that if you love games, you ought to go make games. Like, yeah, maybe. I don't want to discourage you from that, but not everyone who sings along to the radio starts a band. And
yeah.
That's okay.
That's actually a good point. I never thought of it that way.
Or you can start a garage band that don't get anywhere. You still have fun playing with
yourselves. I've never thought of the idea of people who don't sing along. And I think it's hard for people to grasp. It took me a long time. It wasn't until Square Sounds Tokyo that when Rand asked me, like, hey, could you film this up on stage? I was like, yeah, sure. And kind of being on the other side of what I'm usually at. Like, usually I'm not the one on stage. I'm not the one singing or performing. I'm the audience member doing the calls, repeats, knowing the songs, everything else.
The audience.
Being on that sort of side, I understood, like, okay, I get the energy you get from this and why you do it. I have no desire to do this.
Right.
It's with me in game development. It's like, I understand, I want to know all the ins and outs because I want to be this informed person that goes and doesn't make these snap judgment calls of a game or you know, that doesn't make a decision based upon, you know, that I like this or whatever. People say play games first, study them to learn. Yeah. And I think that's a good point too, the idea of learning game mechanics and what makes a thing tick. Like for me, I know a lot of people would in the NES era, railed on games like, Zelda 2, The Adventures of Link. And I've gone back and played the game again and, like, noticed certain things I didn't pick up on, like the fact that they did amazing things with pixel art. I was like, I can't believe you did this. And knowing what I know now about how the Nintendo works and you know, what their limitations were, I'm like, I still can't believe you fucking pulled this off. And there's, you know, and years later, I'd read stories about, like, how Metroid only had, like, 23 or, like, 100-some-odd rooms actually.
That's why you're able to do the weird things, like when you half open the door and you go up through seven.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like there's secret hidden rooms. Like, no, you're just fooling the cartridge into thinking you're somewhere where you're actually
right,
not.
Exactly.
It's trying to build with what information it has.
Right, and it's those sorts of things that, you know, I would learn and go, like, this is super elegant. And now I've gotten older and I've talked with, you know, various devs and poked at games and gone to these panels where it's, again, these, like, behind the scenes, like, missives and give me all this information that I'm like, I get to, I'm sort of spoiled in that I have friends that work on this stuff.
Yeah, no, I've very much been punching above my weight for a long time, and I've made friends with them, and that I've got a reputation that I'm safe and that I'm not going to burn them on stuff. And actually, something you had brought up before we started recording about how people will come up and ask you, "Do you develop?" There's a reason that they ask that you may not have considered, is that they want to have the conversation that they get to have with their actual fellow developers, where they get to compare their own experiences back and forth. And if you don't have them, it kind of shuts them down because they really want to have the conversation as much as possible.
Whereas I want to have those too.
Yes.
But just because I don't develop doesn't mean I don't create.
Right.
And I think that's the sort of the hard part to explain.
Well, you shouldn't expect that game developers are any more socially adept than anyone else.
In fact, you should expect the exact opposite. And I don't.
And
there are times where I in the past I've mentioned that I am a podcaster and they shut down because there's this interpretation of, oh, you're a podcaster, you're press, you're trying to get some like, no, I actually honestly really do care about these games and how they're made. And just because, like, for example, like one of my favorite games, and I talked with him just while he was like my first Fantastic Arcades, mind you, was Terry Kavanaugh's VVVVV.
Mm, yep.
And the game itself was originally written in Flash. I put that in quotation marks because it's in Flash, but it's compiled. And because Flash, you know, unless you knew about Flash having that compiled mode, you don't interpret that. You interpret Flash meaning garbage unless you're like me that understood that Alien Hominid came from the guys that were originally Newgrounds.
Yeah, that how important Newgrounds was to
unless you understood the history of things.
Yeah. There's a period where basically everyone was making stuff just for
people
Newgrounds.
People say don't say podcaster, tell me you're a blogger. Yeah.
So much better.
That's so much better. I'm a blogger. I'm trying to get them hits.
They don't want to deal with someone who hasn't done anything, and they're just wanting to get started, and they want to, like, piggyback on their success.
And that's the hard part. It's not even so much, like, because it's not the time like that, but it's knowing, again, I have enough of a understanding of, like, I may never have made a Flash game, but I know of Newgrounds. I know of how things developed. I know that Super Meat Boy began as this kind of game. I know all these people began as this because I was part of that scene. Mm-hmm. I understand Alien Hominid was this because I fucking bought on PS2 and loved the shit of it because it was a goddamn, like, it was like
punishing, but it was fun and cute and lighthearted.
It was the PS2 tribute to Metal Slug, and I'm like, yes. Thank you. I love Metal Slug 2. We all play that same Neo Geo game. I feel happy.
Yep.
And it's those sort of things where it's hard to explain to a dev that, yes, I am quote-unquote press, but I'm not the same type of press you deal with because I'm actually give a shit. And right. I want to hear your story because your story is fascinating to me because, to me, these video games, these games I play, it's funny. I keep thinking about it now these days that – I mean, I play a majority of indie games. I think mm-hmm. like the last AAA game I started playing was Breath of the Wild on the Switch, and that's because I bought it.
Well, I mean, you think about how much things have changed so fundamentally in the past 10 years. In many ways, I think of it coming full circle to the days of Richard Garriott selling floppy disks and Ziploc bags.
Yep.
I mean, back then, you could make a game if you found a distribution channel with a small team. Whereas there was a long period of time.
Not fake press.
Not fake press.
I should start using that.
You're not fake press.
Well, because it's one of those things where I'm always cagey about that when I talk to a developer. Like, I always hold that back as much as I can. Not because I want to have. Because at the very end. If I don't get an interview, if I don't get a podcast for thing, fuck it. I don't give a shit. I'd rather have a conversation. Like, I'd rather talk to
you'd rather treat them like a human being.
But that's sort of the thing, and it's hard to explain that
and
is what
they
the show
don't
is.
Know if you can handle that. Yeah.
Right, and that's sort of the thing. It's like, I can handle that because I'd rather you be real with me. And again, it's not because I want to have that sound bite or whatever. I'm like,
that's been a big motivator for me, is that I want to see more game developers admit what they do in public. Yeah, and I've met people who have been working in games for 10 years or more, and it's like, my mom doesn't know what I do for a living. Like, why doesn't she know? Can you not talk to her about it? I mean, not everyone has the same relationship with their mom. I know,
right?
That,
but even like the idea of like, because there's a good documentary. What is it? It's about the Japanese scene.
Yeah. Branching Paths.
Branching Paths.
They played that away against Ranchero.
Yeah,
that
amazing
was right.
Doc. I got it because I thought I saw Wiley Wiggins, who was always funny with me.
I don't know if he was in it, but Rusty Moyer through the Twitter feed.
Yeah, somehow it got in.
Because it was about the Downwell guy getting found by Devolver Digital and published by it. Yeah.
Right, and it got put in my purview because of Wiley. Mm-hmm. And I always joke, I always think the funny thing with Wiley, I always remember the funny story with Wiley Wiggins has nothing to do with him. But I was at my friend's place in back in Laredo, and his cousin was there, a good friend of mine too, and we're sort of chit-chatting about the podcast. He's like, what kind of guests have you had on the podcast? Because he was about the podcast, right? He had my friend Mari on. That's about that. I go, I've had this guy, you probably don't know, Wiley Wiggins. So he's like, Wiley Wiggins? So the guy that was on fucking Days of Confused? Wiley, go,
he's done more things in the past 20 years.
I mean, like,
he makes a joke all the time about it. But
technically, yes, but not for that. Like, I had him on because I knew him. I didn't even know about the movie. I knew him from FAA. And it's just funny when I bring it up. Like, that's what that was the thing. I was like, okay.
He's internalized that pretty well.
No, I know, and I talk with him about it and that. But it's one of those funny moments of like, I think about who I'm interacting with and who I interacted with.
They're human. They're people. They're strange people, but they're people. And I have a Wiley Wiggins story. Is that I was on.
Everyone has a Wiley Wiggins story.
Well, I see him at least every month. I'm going to see him tomorrow. In fact, but
I'm going to talk to him tomorrow too.
There was the at one point the YouTube series the Hot Pepper Gaming channel.
Oh, yes.
So Devolver Digital at one point got a bunch of people to agree to do this. And they rented out this house in South Austin and set up a camera crew in there.
Of course they did.
And it was me and Wiley Wiggins and Rusty Moyer and Richard Cook and Chris Graft, who's the editor in chief from Gamma Sutra, who lives here in Austin, by the way.
I didn't realize that.
Yes, he's been here for a while. You'll see him at Wego sometimes, but we all just basically did videos of it, and I found out Wiley had never seen the show before. He had never seen it, and I actually pulled out my phone and showed him one of the hosts. Like, all three of the main hosts of that show were there.
Right.
They weren't going to be filmed there, but they were behind the scenes. And I showed him this, and Wetter looked at this and goes, "Oh, this is a bad idea." And I'm like, "Yeah, we're in for it, man." And I mean, I was the only person there that had written out what I wanted to say. Everyone else is just, well, I mean, that's what kind of the show was about. Like, these people trying to, like, maintain brain function enough to explain a video game while their mouth is on fire. I mean, this is not food. You're giving yourself chemical burns in your mouth when you're doing this.
But that's, like, it's funny you bring that up because I think of, like, and I don't care what.
You can look this one up. I reviewed Zeo Drifter, X-E-O-D-R-I-F-T-E-R,
but
by the maker of Mutant Muds.
I was just thinking back at Devolver stuff and their amazing E3 presentation.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone fucking says. That is it's funny because there were people that were watching it not understanding it. And here I am going, this is everything I wanted it to be.
You have to remember that Devolver Digital is the third iteration of the game company that Harry Miller and Mike Wilson wanted to make. The original was Gathering of Developers, and everyone remembers the E3 promise slots they had from that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same people, but basically back then, the market had not cut up with what they want to do now.
Yeah.
Back then, you still had to make really high, high-end first-person shooters with big teams and big budgets up front.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I believe that if Max Payne had come out on time, or if Duke Nukem Forever had come out in that era,
they'd still be around.
Yeah,
no, Duke Nukem Forever came out when it was supposed to come out, absolutely. Playing that game and having it... It would have totally been fine.
Sure,
it coming out as late as it did is what fucked.
Well, it would have been
as it should have as
3D Realms ended up doing other things that made them enough money to sustain this endless project. I mean, here I talked to other people. Here's a perspective on that. There are people who were at 3D Realms and then became Triptych Games, like the people that just kept working on it. And after Gearbox bought the IP for it, there are people that had worked on Duke Nukem Forever for more than a decade. And they tried to get in a job afterwards, and they're being told by recruiters, you need to ship something else.
Well, because weren't some of those, the 3D Realms guys, like, didn't some of them spin off, like, to Ion Storm?
Well, a lot of them, like, again, it had been going so long.
It's so hard to remember who and what came out of 3D Realms.
Well, Ion Storm was people that had worked for... people around Dallas. I mean,
right,
the primary ones were John Romero and Joy O'Flaherty and Todd Porter and Tom Hall.
Well, because I always remember Ion Storm just because they made one of my quintessential games for me in the piece. Like, the game I remember being, like, at least, when it came to FPSs and sort of that. Not so much shooter. I mean, it was a shooter, but not so much a, like...
You're talking about Deus Ex?
Yes.
Okay, so the important thing to remember is that was done here in Austin, not in Dallas.
Right, that's what I remember.
In the words of Yahtzee Croshaw, there was a point when a bolt of lightning struck John Romero's hair, and Ion Storm split into two companies, Ion Storm Dallas and Ion Storm Austin. The probably the smartest thing that John Romero ever did of Ion Storm was basically tell Warren Spector, keep your team in Austin, because they were actually trying to start up a Looking Glass studio, a satellite, but Looking Glass Studio, which again was also backed by Eidos, Ion Storm ended up being bought by Eidos. They shut down,
and then Eidos being acquired by Square Enix. And...
But I mean, they were going to have a satellite studio for that Warren Spector was running here in Austin, but they made Deus Ex for it. And that's, I mean, arguably, you know, just getting that.
I can say how important that game was. When I was at, it was the first time I'd ever been to, like, Video Games Live, and he wasn't performing, but he was there just sitting down.
Oh, Alex Brandon.
Alex Brandon, and I go, and I'm there, and somebody meet him, and I go, hold on a second, you're the guy that did Deus Ex.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's like, what? I'm like, and I lost my shit, because, like, that was I've had him on the show before. Yep. But that was how I met him, and it turned out, like, we knew a lot of different same people. We were both part of the same crowds, and in terms of, like, the OC Remix things and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this all makes sense now.
Yep.
And talking with him and everything else, but it's always fascinating again with coming back to the you know, indie side of gaming and everything else, and I think about now game development and how a lot of the games I play now aren't your AAA fare. And so because of that, I tend to meet a lot of these real people. I tend to meet a lot of these sort of, you know,
if you think
developers.
About it, if you're working at a big company, there's going to be someone whose job it is to interface with the public, be it the marketing or the PR guy. Yeah, but if you're an indie, you kind of have to do it yourself, except that you're going to reveal yourself that you're not that good at relating to everything else, especially during development.
A lot of times, when this is something that's hard to explain to people who haven't created something. Or don't tend to create stuff, whether it becomes a books, whether it comes to posts online or whatever.
Yeah, working with an editor, they never do.
Well, even if you do, especially if you don't, but it's the idea of understanding that sometimes that is your outlet to try to communicate with the world. Not because you don't want to communicate. Most of the time, people do want to communicate. People want to reach out, meet your like-minded people, your equals, whatever that is. This generation now is kind of amazing. You know, I kind of got in the birth of it, so to speak. But a lot of this generation, like now, kind of grow up is lucky as hell in that you have now if you have an interest in something, chances are there's a subreddit for it already.
Right.
And there's already a place where you can go to talk with people that like that thing.
Well,
even
also,
if it's that thing is like crochet or making macrame specifically of John Voight or something.
Or if you want to meet someone in person, you can use the internet to go find those people. There are regional cons.
There's meetups, there's conventions for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and it didn't go away just because of the internet. People actually want to do stuff in person.
Well, now there's five different My Little Pony conventions. There's eight billion different indie dev conventions.
You know, that's going to hit big this weekend. It's going to be ponies and replicants.
Hey, look, I'm excited for both those. I'm into both the properties. So look, I'm a cyberpunk Pinkie Pie lover. I
will admit that I'm.
So is Andrew WK. Andrew WK is a big MLP fan too. Pinkie Pie fan.
Here's the thing about it. I will admit two things about it. One, I watched enough of the first season to realize it's not for me.
That's fair.
I appreciated it for what it was, but I'm also really good friends with a guy named Bob Carr, who with one other partner ended up a few years ago setting the standard for independent unofficial My Little Pony Con. He runs a Nightmare Nights up in Dallas.
Oh, really?
And that was the first one where what he told me, he had worked with Acon, the big anime convention that's been around for decades. So he knew all about how to negotiate with hotels,
how not to oversell
anything. But one part is that he actually programmed it really well and that he didn't just invite the voice actors. He actually invited the production staff.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was like you can learn about how to produce a children's cartoon from
these people. Well, because there's a lot of people, again, and I think this is where indie devs have helped out a ton because they understand how they got in this whole thing and they know that there are people out there, kids or even, you know, college kids, whatever, and that's sort of why I like to bring devs on, because a lot of times people want to get in this industry, but they don't know how.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's kind of like, look, I just tell them, go on Gamma Sutra, read it every day.
Yeah.
Go on Game Career Guide, read it every day.
I mean, because a lot of it is, you know, even though, again, we have colleges now, we know they have the Guild House as sort of a thing.
Guild Hall.
Even to a certain degree, Full Sail, and I'm not saying that, you know, this is not me endorsing either one.
DigiPen up in Seattle.
Right. This is not me endorsing either one of them. These are just programs that exist.
They're options. People know that they exist. You can totally type the graphics on level 3.
Right. Exactly. But they exist, and they can guide you certain ways. But at the end, you know, and I think this is where we get, you know, getting back to talking about why you see Unity everywhere is that you can just make, and that's, to me, that's exciting.
It is exciting, and I wish more people understood what we've been talking about. Is when you make it for the first time, it's probably going to be crumb.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be crummy, and then you make something else.
Well, because I think best...
But a lot of people like make that first thing is like, it's so precious. The whole world must know my genius, and I'm going to put it out there and expect people to buy it.
Well, because I think a lot of times people forget that they wrote shitty poetry in high school.
They had doodles in their corners of their margin.
I think people forget that they wrote that one love letter to that one girl that they really loved. Video games
is somehow different because
That's the thing. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say is that people forget that they did that shitty poetry in high school, that they had that one phase where they were really, really, really into the Smiths, you know, or whatever. And that's not me criticizing Smith. I love Smiths. I love a lot of, you know, New Order is on my, you know, there's a lot of music that's on my fucking playlist. But they forget that they wrote shitty stuff.
Right.
And they didn't revisit it because that wasn't their thing. They got into law school or whatever, their medical school, or they went to college, or they did their own thing, which is cool. Awesome. Or they kept going on other things. They made different career paths, and then somehow someone says, well, look, you can make video games. And they go, I play video games. I like this stuff. And then they do it. And, you know, it's funny. I think like the last time I remember hearing a story about that kind of happening, there's a Blu-ray I have in my collection that I have purely for the commentary. I paid $10 for it.
Okay.
When I saw it, I looked at the box and I looked the back. I saw it said director's commentary. And I was like, I need to know. And that movie is Street Fighter the movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It has director's commentary. And I'm like, I had to know. I have to know the story behind this. There's so many. I have many questions, and they must be answered. Because you wonder, how did that happen? You know, what world did this, you know, how did this all work out? How did we get here? How did we get to having every character, you know, Kylie Minogue as Cammy? Where did we go right or wrong in the world? And the commentary goes into how the guy, like, basically, like, a friend approached him and says, hey, you play video games, right? It's like, yeah, because he wrote a couple of scripts. Like, yeah, I actually made a game, Cadillacs, and he actually worked on Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, I think a PC port or some shit like that.
Oh, wow.
He goes, hey, so we got the execs from Capcom in this weekend. Would you want to, you know, pitch him would you want to pitch him, like, the Street Fighter movie? Like, yeah, sure, why not? I could make outlines. Like, yeah, they really need a script, and they're going to be leaving by Monday, so you need to kind of, we need it kind of now. And he goes, okay, well, do it, but I need to build a director. It goes, okay, that's fine. And I think he literally pulled all-nighters to write a goddamn script or something, or whatever the fuck he pitched to the Japanese executives from Capcom at the time. And again, I imagine the conversation, there's like, he's saying his presentation, whatever, and the translators are just saying, does it really matter? These Americans are gonna pay a shitload of money. And that's the truth, and we did, and it happened. But it's funny hearing those sort of things, because it's, you know, it's
not everything that's going to be made under every circumstance. All the circumstances are going to be pure, and it's not always going to be as good as you can imagine it being. Because I can imagine a Street Fighter movie being good.
Everybody always says that they've got the – it's always a comment when it comes to porting a game to movie if you follow what the game says, it'll be fine. Not realizing that a game is like a 60-hour journey sometimes.
A game is a game.
The other thing, idea of like of experiences, but it's fascinating now, kind of hearing those sort of stories and going, if that's how the big guys do it, because I hear, like, you know, friends of mine telling stories how they'll pull something off, and it's like I'll be amazed that they pull those off. It's like, yeah, I kind of got lucky with the code. Or
I run into people all the time. They're like, I can make no budget movies. Yeah, well, that's possible to do. You don't necessarily want to do that with games. Or there are people who are writing novels all the time.
There are ways to make. I'll put it this way: there are ways to make a cheaper game. And I say that because everyone has this weird, you know, like the one conversation I always hate having these days is like what it makes a video game.
Right. Well, and also the notion of what a game is. There are lots of little interactive pieces of software, and we all call them game, even though they have nothing to do with each other.
Right. That's okay. That's why I always hate the line of like
different
platforms, you know, what's a video
different
game?
Different genres, different age groups, different demos, whatever.
Well, different target audiences, different target target sort of things, all these kind of concepts and stuff, and it's always it, for me, like I play, like one of my current game of the year right now is Rakuen, which is a game.
Oh yeah, you posted about that.
Yeah, like Lord Shigehara, the
kid with a paper hat.
Yeah, it's an amazing game. It's a beautiful, heartfelt game.
That's the kind of thing you can, when you have exactly what you want to do and you execute on that.
Yeah.
Because again, there's a difference between having a great idea and executing on it.
Right.
There's so much that can go wrong when you're trying to get this onto that.
But if I were to say is the game like, but when I try to explain the game, I go, it's like a JRPG. I go, kind of, but no, there's no experience. There's no this. It is what it is. And it's a beautiful game. And I recommend anyone that's sort of, even like loves things like To the Moon or loves Laura's composition works. Like one of my early things with her was she did the soundtrack for Plants vs. Zombies, and I have played that there. I remember like I was flying an international trip, and on like the computer screen they had like the games that had Plants vs. Zombies. You go, I like Plants vs. Zombies. I love the soundtrack. I remember she did. And I clicked.
She's the one who sings in the credits, right?
Right. Yeah. And I clicked the game, and the game, I guess because it licensing didn't have the soundtrack, and I was like, I'm not liking this anymore. Like, I stopped playing it because I was like half of it was the soundtrack for me, and I realized that I was like, I'm missing part of the experience. But you know, would I say, for example, someone's like, I love video games. I love playing, you know, Call of Duty and Destiny 2. Would I suggest them to play Rakuen? Probably not. Not because I don't think it's a beautiful game. For me, it is my game of the year right now, and it's going to be hard,
right?
Because a lot of times the sell for me when it comes to like story driven games is making my conscious mind forget that I'm looking at pixels and that, you know, that I'm, you know, the sure. idea of like being emotional over things that don't exist.
Well, you understand that, and there are some friends of yours that you probably would expect,
exactly.
But you don't. We have conversations like that for other kinds of media.
Yep.
We wouldn't recommend it to someone who likes romance comedies.
Yeah.
I mean, they're different kinds of movies. They're, you know, indie films and like documentaries, and we have summer blockbusters.
Yeah,
there's and more than that, there's a whole economy in Hollywood of movies that don't get made, but people still get paid for it.
Yeah.
Whereas in games, it's not there yet. I mean, a good way I always say about the game industry, and we often talk about how it's immature. Well, it's kind of passed through its childhood into its awkward adolescence, and things like, oh, there are women that are different, they exist, but we don't really know about them, but we need to respect them somehow, and we somehow caring about how other people think about us.
We're coming to the point now, and I say this, John, with the caveat, we're almost out of time. We're pretty much at the hour mark.
Yep.
I've achieved the mission. We're coming to a time in game development, and I think this is why I like having people who are in the indie scene or aware of the game scene, either AAA or otherwise, but most importantly indie side for sure, is that we're coming to the point where I think the guys there, one of the guys on Funhouse, Adam Kovic, always says it, that we're in an amazing time of gaming where there are so much choice out there.
Yeah.
There's so, you know, that I can play a game like Rakuen.
It's almost democratized.
Well, you know, I can play a game like Rakuen and, you know, play Breath of Wild, enjoy it for what it is, and then switch back to Hyper Light Drifter and see three separate type of experiences. And then somewhere in there, spin back up VA11 Hall A or Read Only Memories and get entirely different things. And, you know, we're at a point in time where you could, where like one of the, you know, one of the highest rated games, you know, in terms of story was nothing more than what appeared to be an old kind of 90s computer interface and trying to, you know, stumble through videos, that being Her Story.
Oh, Her Story.
And it's an amazing, for me, it always makes me happy. It makes me angry when I see people like sort of slam on like games that aren't for them.
Sure.
And sort of say like, well, why is this? Because it's like there's so much out there. You don't have to worry if you do not like what Destiny is doing for a game. There are
other options for you.
And I think that's why it is. I'll have friends of mine that will say things like, I don't really play any new video games. I can only play retro stuff because there doesn't seem to be anything for me. I go, I wish I could introduce you to the world of indie games because it's like there's so much that's like, you play Hyper Light and you're getting your tones of like, oh shit, you know, like this is
telling
Metroid.
Stories without any words.
You know, you play Rabbit Ribby and it's like, fuck, this is like Metroid all over again. And it's all these sort of things that you like, it's hard to explain to them. I say them, people just like, you know, like I have friends who are like, I don't really PC game. I go, I wish you did, because you're missing out on so much. And not even like piece, not even high graphics. You're just missing out on a ton of indie stuff. And,
right.
And it's, that's changing as time has gone on. Like a lot more indie games are now coming. Like I think one of the top Switch games is an indie game, Golf Story, which is awesome.
Yep.
And people are excited that like tomorrow is when, you know, Stardew Valley comes out on Switch, and mm-hmm. that's exciting for people. And excited, I'm glad they're excited, because I want people to be excited about games, no matter what who makes them or whatnot. I think that's me, and that's sort of why I'm always excited to have somebody that's part of the scene in any way.
There's a great interview on YouTube with Ron Gilbert and his former protege Tim Schafer. I think it was wrapped up in all their development for their what became their RPG. Tim asked Ron, does he think that point and click adventure games are less popular now? And Ron said, no, they're as popular as they ever had been. But when we were making them, 100,000 copies was great.
Yeah.
But, and actually the truth is now true again, because if you have a small team and low overhead cost,
yep.
you would love to have 100,000 copies sold.
That's
you
like can, someone
you
like.
Can, you can measure your success in tens of thousands of units sold. You're not going to be competing with Destiny, but you don't
that's
want
why
to.
Someone like,
you
like,
can't.
Like, is it? Wedjedi, whoever again, mm-hmm. Exists,
right.
And I'm thankful for them existing, because it's like awesome. Somebody else is making these games,
right.
And I understand that that's the case, because it's hard to explain. It's hard to explain to game people, even gamers, mm-hmm. who don't understand the business aspect of it, that there is the business aspect of it, and that there's this idea of like of at the end of the day. If you talk to any dev, mm-hmm. any real dev, at the end of the day, all they really want to be able to do is support themselves. If they have a family, support their family, you know, pay for their kids' college, all the things that you as a normal person want to do too. Pay your rent, all these sort of things,
right.
things you want to do. That's
the difference is that they have a special set of skills that they're applying in a very particular way, and
yep.
they might have appreciated games in a different way than you
yep.
did. I mean, if you love games, if you love a particular game, you should play it. And if you stop liking it, you should stop playing it. Play something else.
Yeah,
don't just limit yourself
so...
to the idea of what games are by saying it's these one or two games.
Exactly.
And I understand when other people talk about saying they play games, they're probably talking about something else.
Yeah.
You know, be open to those conversations and find ways of talking about it that where you're not just trying to one-up one another.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we're not trying to troll each other. We're not trying to win a conversation. You don't really win a conversation.
There's no
you
winning.
You just need to have
it's,
if you've learned something you didn't know, if you
yep.
gain some perspective or insight from someone else that you didn't have, then you will have won.
Exactly.
You can win.
No, that's the thing. And that's sort of why it is that I am in the indie game scene as much as I am. Because usually it's that mindset. It's that cool. That looks awesome. Cool. That sounds fun.
Well, again, they're completely unfettered. No one's telling them what they do. They have no
yeah.
choice but to just go out in that blue ocean and find out what's possible.
Yeah, and
they might utterly fail.
Oh yeah,
but
there are plenty of examples of games I've played that are indie. Like I know
yep.
everybody, and this is the last thought I'll make because we really are out of time. It's like one of the games everybody loves, and I can't. I think it ramps up the difficulty too high, and I will never ever stop saying that is Spelunky.
Yeah.
I know everyone loves Spelunky, and I get why, and I understand what it means as a game, and I understand it, and I go, cool, I can respect this as a dev thing. I will say I do think the difficulty revs up too high for roguelike. That's me, and that's fine. That
yep.
doesn't mean, however, it's a bad design game.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's a bad game, and it's always hard to be that way.
It has an audience of a few
yep.
tens of thousand people.
Yeah,
not
like,
everyone's going
like
to play it, and
yeah,
you have
if
to
you,
accept
if you
that.
Like something rock and roll, awesome.
Right.
Continue liking it. John, thank you so much for being on the show. So, if people want to find you online, or more importantly, if they happen to live in Austin and they're
mm-hmm.
watching live,
yep.
Where can people find you tomorrow? Because something we didn't talk about that I attend all the time too.
Right. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Mr. Pedantic. I'm the guy who tells you you're doing it wrong. But there's a show that happens every month here in Austin called Huegos Rancheros at
yes.
the North Door. I'm going to that. But also, Unite is here in Austin this week.
Yep.
And Aspire Media is having a meetup at Easy Tiger around the same time.
Oh,
so
really?
I may be going downtown early for that.
Oh, shit. When's the Aspire meetup?
I think they're starting at 6:30.
Is that public? public? Is it? Do I have to?
They invited me, so I can let you in.
Okay. What if you live in Ohio? Can he find you there?
Been to Ohio,
but you can follow online. But even more so, you do know a lot of because Austin and because you know you're part of the. You know, mm-hmm. I say indie scene.
I run a beer night for game devs twice a month at two different bars. And I also run the Video Game Makers Unite speaker series at Capital Factory. We're skipping this month, but next month we're having a friend of mine, Beth Banky Schwartz, who's a level designer at Certain Affinity. And she's going to talk about level designing for both single player and multiplayer. Turns out they're different.
Oh, yeah. So. I could tell you that entirely, but that's
there are ways to dovetail, and she's going to cover all that stuff.
No, but that's interesting. Yeah. Again, another stuff. Of course, you can find me. I'm at Vincent404. Then the Twitter is the internet, everywhere else in between. If you want to catch previous podcasts, you can go to our website, cosmicradiotv.com/8bitlife. You'll find links to show notes, previous episodes. And, of course, if you want to help out the show become bigger, better, more awesome, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife. So that's it for today. So tune in next time we talk Nelgeek Bustling completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.